Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. The first show on Sunday after the Coast to Coast show, I think. The second show. So this would be March 6th, 2011. And don't forget to set your clocks somewhere. Set them anywhere, wherever they want to go. So anyhow, we're going to continue with where we were last week. So Dr. Fred, do you want to continue on? Let's just rewind it just a hair. And then start.
Waiting it out. And in this particular
incident, ooh, we're dragging.
Incident, they lost one of the...
Feel it. If it's pretty working pretty well, you'll feel it.
There we go.
Feel it? Hold your hands together. Yeah, you feel it. Yeah, hands together. But up, up. There you go. He's getting jumped. Yeah. Some people really get it. Yeah. I'm going to over-amp you. You put this thing on, you'll be jumping off the wall. Okay, here you can have that back. You get the idea. Half the people, or two-thirds of them up here, felt that. So this is why we begin to introduce these structures into our environment. It makes us happen more. It happens, we become more conscious. Now, I'm going to show you some secrets here. Back to the seven levels. Now we've demonstrated. Another thing I want to show you, this is also polarized to your consciousness. Okay, for example, when the sun comes up in the morning, you're galvanized to this area because you live here, okay? The sun comes up in the morning, that energy is seven colors. The red energy is polarized to the proton, and the violet energy is polarized to the electron. Okay, that hydrogen atom is making 50 million cells per second. The body is taking these cells and making seven endocrine glands in the skin and the bones and all of that. And this body is taking that energy and that polarization of the sun and over a period of 90 days reproducing all of the white and red blood cells in your body and over a period of 7 years changing your entire body, your nerves, everything about your body is completely rejuvenated in 7 years. Okay? So, if we start putting things on the body, after 7 years we can make changes on the body. There are ways of changing the body. As the sun moves across the horizon, this polarity shifts. And so when the sun sets in the evening, the violet is switched over to the proton and the red is switched over to the electron. And there's hydrogen in your blood, believe me. There's lots of it. So your consciousness, from the morning when you got up, and the red, which is the will, expresses the divine will, what makes you open your eyes, wake up from sleep, and get out of bed, that's all will, first ray, to the point to the end of the day, which is magic and balance, and you begin to contemplate what happened to you, changes your consciousness changes, doesn't it? You ever notice that? You think a lot different at midnight than you do in the morning. That's a good example, right? Because it's 180 degrees apart. That is controlled, that frequency rate of your consciousness, cognizing what's going on in your environment over a period of 24 hours, is your ability to adapt to that habitat, to that environment. If I were to pick you up as a group, and take you off to Europe right now and drop you off in England where the time changes, you'd go across about 8 or 9 time changes, you wouldn't quite, I bet you in the morning at 6 o'clock when you normally get up and you're in England, you wouldn't know what you were doing. It would take you a few days to adapt. That's called jet lag. In NASA, we had to deal with jet lag in a greater proportion because when we have astronauts in space, the jet lag is so bad they can't metabolize calcium and they can have a heart attack eventually. That's why we can't keep the astronauts up there too long. Yeah.
With this in mind, where do you get the people who are like my people? Or you better?
Very good question. Excellent question. Excellent question. Very good. Now, I'm going to answer that. I'm not going to answer it yet, but we're right to the edge of that right now. You got that in mind now, okay? That's the next step. I don't lose my eraser here. Okay, now, so we're going to erase this. Okay. Now, we're coming over here. I'm going to show you something. Okay, now here's the second thing you got to keep in mind with this. With this hydrogen atom changing frequency, okay, and this phase changing frequency, right, then obviously the chakras are changing colors, aren't they? They're not. There's no particular color assigned to a chakra system, okay? For example, there is a stationary grid that you can use as a reference point. You can start with red here and take violet to the base of the spine. That's where you start, okay? But as the day goes on, it changes. It's always changing, okay? It's rotating. Some people are night people. Some people are day people. Some people can be either when you adjust yourself, okay? Because that's polarization. In other words, that's the chakra you're working on, okay? If you're in the blue, in the heart, okay, for example, you're a healer on one level. You're a creator. If you're in the head, in the red, you're a fire person. You're driving. You're instigating. Or if you're in the violet, you could be having a hell of a lot of sex, or you could be very creative, depending on which level of desire you're working on, okay? And all in between. Now, the next thing is, here we have a person with an aura field, okay? This person A has an aura field, right? This is an individual, okay? If you have all the people in here, all the aura fields combined, we have probably a summation of these aura fields from everybody in here. And this summation gives the group a consciousness. Now, as I do this lecture, for example, maybe at some point somebody will walk in, and then somebody will maybe walk out. It's just a balance. You know, that person has heard what they could heard and they can't handle any more. Or somebody outside didn't need to hear the first part, and they just came in. And so they walk in right in the middle and sit down, you know, because energy is balancing here. That's what it has to be. It's really interesting when I used to go out in the field having contact sometimes, and the ship would come in, and even though Sannyasi wouldn't make herself apparent, I'd have a group out there. And sometimes, like in Aspen was a good example, we'd do it there a lot. We'd have a group out there, and I'd say there's going to be some ships coming, and the ships would come, and they may not just come right up and hover in our face. That rarely happened, but sometimes it did, but most of the time it didn't. And some people, there'd be a ship up there and be hovering, and you could see the faint outline of it, and some people could see it quite well, other people couldn't see anything. Okay, because they just weren't ready to see that yet. That vibration didn't register. Oftentimes when Billy was in Switzerland, Sannyasi would come and she'd open up a grid in the front of the ship. People in the very front could see it, but people right off to the side couldn't see it because you can control that. Okay, that energy is controllable in a more advanced human. And they do it, you know, electronically in their ships. So anyway, if you go outside this room, when you leave here, this feeling that you have right now is going to dissipate into the masses out there. And when you leave the building tonight and you get back out there on the street, it's going to go way different. And if you want a big contrast, go down to Olive Street where we stay at the Mayflower sometimes, that hotel, and walk down that street with those people after being here, and you'll see what I mean. Big difference in the aura ambience, okay? You end up with the aura of Seattle, which is people like yourself and people like everybody else out there. You end up with a synergistic combination of something. You end up with all of the cities of the United States, and you end up with a synergistic combination of something there. And that is a seasoning. And you end up with all the countries of the world, and you end up with something of a homogenation of all of those auras. Unfortunately, the Earth population right now of the entire world is not... Let's give you an example here. I still haven't forgot about your question. Here's the Sun right here, right? Okay. Then we come out. The first planet is Mercury. And then... out to Earth, and then we go out to Venus, and all these different planets, right? Jupiter, Neptune, all the way out here. Okay, each one of these has a frequency. They're all different, but they're harmonious. When you get to the Earth, okay, when you get out here to the Earth, what happens is, with the Earth, right past Venus here, the Earth, boom, it has an aura field that's negative. It doesn't coincide with the Sun or the solar system at all. Because there are more people in the growth-resistant generation that would never even get close to this convention than there are people that are interested. So as a result, it's a growth-resistant generation. And this is creating negative waves all over the place, and that's why extraterrestrials are here. Some to feed the negativity, like the grays, and others to change it. Okay. Now, going back to an individual, now we've seen how auras can work. Person A has an aura field, right? Zero personality, okay? All of a sudden, we have person B here. With person B here, that now we can interact between person A and B, the two aura fields, and we can have motion. And this creates personality. So we have personality immediately between the first two souls on the energy. And that out of that creates karma. Okay? Positive and negative karma immediately starts here. Then we have person C. Person C is the third person. Now we have a trinity. When we have a trinity, we have an avenue for force to flow at right angles. Okay? So you have person A, B, and C. The action of these three people or more creates a group action, and that's called dharma. Okay? And Dharma is the reason the Pleiadians left. It wasn't karma. It was Dharma. Karma made, you know, was the reason they came, and Dharma is the reason they left. Because they didn't want to carry Dharma into their race back. They don't want wars back on Era. Okay? That's the first thing. Yeah. And they would have been retarded. Yeah, it goes down to the basic thing: physician, heal thyself. Okay. Now, the next thing is, because of Dharma, we have an interaction. We have a field of energy. How the hell can we have Dharma without having a field of energy? We couldn't. You have to have it. So we have a field of energy here. Let's put a fourth person in. Let's person D. So we have a field of energy between A, B, C, and now D. The field of energy, we have karma between the first two, or these two, or any two creates the karma, or any group. Then we have the Dharma, and the Dharma of a nation. Okay? France. Look at the Dharma of France. We're still shooting bombs off in the water. Okay? Look at the karma, or the Dharma of Iraq. You know, look at the Dharma of the Ukraine right now in Bosnia. A lot of Dharma going on there. They can't shake it. It's so infested in their cells, they're stuck with it. Okay? And it's so bad that it upsets the world. There has to be divine intervention. There's no other way at this point. But it's not a bunch of healing angels coming down and saying prayers on you, let me tell you. Christ is mighty pissed off for being hung up on the cross. All right? Look at it that way. There is an attitude involved here. Okay? It's called purifying by fire. And it's in the Bible. It's everywhere. Okay. So now, this energy field that we have here, you know what it's called? It's called the emotional body. Because that's all it is. You could clear karma instantly if you had no disagreement, but the personality would absolve itself. And if many people had cleared all their... You went around and completely forgave from your heart all sins, everybody, you'd have no dharma. You'd be totally free. But that's too simple. Because the ego, the lower self, the nature desire of the lower self, the seven levels of energy, are directed to feeding the ego most of the time, you know? Not to feeding humanity and getting the real gift that the ego seeks. You understand that? So, what we create with the Dharma of all these people is called the astral plane. It's created here. The astral plane, even though, for example, person C got old and passed on. Okay, where did person C go when they passed on? Where did their embodiment of energy and consciousness? Went up to the astral plane normally. Where's that? Well, the Catholics, the purgatory, they got heaven. You're up here. You went right up there. Your whole consciousness is up there. And when religion stepped in during the Piscean Age, realized the game, they put money behind it, the third ray, the Holy Ghost, the female energy, the cosmic plane, whatever you want to call it, the thyroid chakra, power of the emerald, music note C, vitamin C, all the same energy, different increments. And they created this astral plane. And then pretty soon, person B gets pregnant, and pow, here comes C back again. After probably not remembering the heaven experiences unless C has done this enough time and become enlightened behind it and become a master and gain what's called continuity of consciousness, okay, as some masters do. So that's the astral plane. The Egyptians were so acknowledgeable and so they paid so much homage to the physical plane that when they embalmed themselves with tannic acid and went inside the pyramid to seal that process, and then they buried themselves. They weren't coming back into their bodies. What they were trying to do is leave a legacy saying, don't screw up the physical plane, because you sure as hell are going to screw up the astral plane if you do that. And if you still do that, you're going to screw up the mental plane, which is the same process working all the way to the one source. Don't screw it up. Keep that beautiful, elastic thing going, and don't make creation stop. Because you have pralaya, which is when everything stops and God takes a nap, and then we have manamantara, Tibetan, for the time of manifestation. Keep the manifestation going and have the recreation within that. Okay, so this is when you get into higher forces like the Andromedans. Now, as far as the personality goes in this scenario, people are, first of all, astrology is a science of a grid that emotionally determines how your chakra system is going to react to any form of electrical precursing energy, whether it be stress, whether it be euphoria. You know, so there's 12 different signs of reaction to a situation that have been observed by astrologers since the beginning of time. When a person is still down in the solar plexus area of compassion. When you lift yourself out of that space and move up into heart chakra, the science of astrology goes away, and we come on to what are called the ray types, and you end up with seven different ray types, seven frequencies of ray types, from the Logoic, the father energy, to the mother energy, with Christ energy is the Modanic energy. St. Germain's this energy here. The Buddha was a Buddhic plane, yellow solar plexus. Different masters. The Pleiadians are on the mental plane. They're more mental. Astral plane are devotees, for example. Those type of energies, people that follow Krishna, they follow this, they follow that. Usually because they've done a bunch of sins and they can't live with themselves, so they have to follow somebody that seems to have balance. There's many reasons. It's true. They're true. It's true. And you eventually go on these rays. So your personality adapts to those rays. And when it starts to make that adaptation, you start polarizing yourself, and you could be, like, I'm a night person. I like to function well at night. So what happens when you become a night person, your energy follows thought. So the dharma and karma that you create becomes me centered at night. I create a lot of energy at night when I do things. But sometimes I'll switch over and I'll create it in the morning, but I'm still, you don't rarely find me going to bed before 3. And I'm usually getting up around 8:30 to 9. That's about what I do, you know. So in that area, I work in the astral plane. So you get polarized there. So I would have a lot of violet working on me. And then when I get up at 9, I get very intense. Morning. In the other room. And that is that there's been a great deception of brought to the people of the world about what's really going on in the raising of consciousness. You know, as you know, the governments of the world, especially the free world, are kind of controlled by the tri-lads. And so as a result, everything they can do to inaugurate what came out in an Executive Intelligence Review magazine in 1981 in the March issue was called the Haig-Kissinger Depopulation Policy. And what that's all about is basically destroying consciousness through the food chain, through the air supply, through the ozone layer, in many different ways. That's what's going on. The reason that that's such a big problem is because we are rotating around the Pleiades right now. It's called the precession of the equinox, which takes place every 25,827.5 years. And in this rotation around the Pleiades, we have 2,000-year subcycles. And we have 12,000 years where these 2,000 subcycles are of a lower frequency, kind of the Dark Ages, the Renaissance, periods of times when they have the Inquisitions, the burning of the higher knowledge, which is accumulated during the side that we're going into now, because we're going into the positive side, okay? We're going 12,000 years of positive energy, which at some point they call the photon belt, is a thing that manifests itself, these kinds of things. The governments of the world are very, the leaders of the governments of the world, the big strong families, are very aware of what these changes are. When Nostradamus wrote his quatrains, you know, years ago, he had merely tuned in to one of these 25,000-year cycles. And you can look back. Every time you have a 25,000-year cycle, you have a rise and a fall of a major civilization. If you were to go down, for example, to Mexico, when David Niven, the archaeologist, was exploring down there, he found three cities south of Mexico City, one upon the other, each 25,000 years old. Which was really interesting is the lower city that he found at the lowest level, which was 75,000 years ago, they had traces of doing metallurgy and metalwork and all, and forging and all these kinds of things. Atlantis was another area that rose and fell. Atlantis fell 12,000 years ago. It fell as we declined off the Golden Age and started back into the Renaissance period. During this time, the extraterrestrials we know as the Greys also came into our lives, and they got involved with the black priests of Atlantis and Poseidon and proceeded to introduce the scalar wave techniques and the scalar wave warfare. Scalar wave warfare and that technology was also used to cut the bricks from some of the great pyramids in Egypt. Some of you might have studied some of the old quarries
And not only did the builders of some of the pyramids show that they could cut these rocks with some kind of beam of energy, they even left some quarries where the rock was partially cut so the future generations could see right where the beam started and stopped. So they left partially cut rocks there. The Greys at that time, when they came into human civilization, came in and began to interfere with human DNA. Human DNA, or DNA in general, is pretty much the sign of the times. Liara, who was a contact person that I've been with from the Pleiades, from Andromeda, told me back in about 1993 that the world, by 1995, would be well-versed in DNA, and at the end of 95, they'd be well-versed in Andromedans. As a matter of fact, they said the world would know of their presence. So we're running out of time. I think that it's going to get real active on the psychic levels now as we come into the year 96. And, of course, you know, CNN is transmitting DNA information every day with the O.J. Simpson trial. So everybody in here ought to know what RFLP and testing is, and some of the PCR testing. You know, we'll have a quiz at that at the end. So you begin to learn about the...
Anyway, that side of the tape's dragging, and we covered that last week, so we'll go ahead and stop here. And now that we've stopped here, we'll put on something else. And let's see, we haven't done this one yet. Okie dokie. Seattle Expo. Yeah, I'm going to put on something else. If you want to continue on with that one, just go back to last week, because that's when we covered that. It's starting to repeat itself. I just covered the last half of last week. So now we will start off with something new. It should be fun. Take us to the top of the hour. See where Dr. Bell is here on this.
My background basically is...
Oh, listen to that. It sounds like chipmunks.
Dr. Fred Bell. I started into energy when I was pretty small, about 7 years old.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
I was working at the University of Michigan when I was about 14 on atomic energy.
I could go from chipmunk down to normal.
I was in the Air Force, and I was an early morning radar. I worked around our defense system and spaceships and flying saucers and all the things that the Air Force doesn't want to talk about. I got out of that, I went into aerospace, and I worked with the late Wernher von Braun. We built spaceships. This was back in the mid-60s. And when I realized what the Air Force was starting to turn me against the system back in the late 50s, and by the time I'd gotten into the mid-60s working for the government, 10 years by this time, I was so turned against the system at this point in time that all I could do is couldn't even wait till the space programs ended, but I somehow or other made it through to the end. Got real rebellious towards the end of the space program, and I was working. My employer was Rockwell, but our contractor was NASA. And Rockwell was performing such a poor service for NASA, and it was the government's money, people's money that was being spent, that I filed a large grievance on behalf of myself against Rockwell for NASA, and promptly got fired for doing that. So I was out of a profession. I was a professional scientist by this point. And the grievance was about fire hazards and human consciousness, the awareness of the job on the birds. We were having a lot of fires. As a result of my grievance, these three people died down in the Cape. If you remember that one incident where the three astronauts died. And my grievance was to stop that from happening, because I could see that happening. So when that happened, then they gave me my job back, and I resigned, and I walked out. That was my end of the government spending. And I started studying with the Eastern teachers for quite a while. I spent a number of years with them, and I learned the Eastern way of life, which, when I studied Brahman science, it made a lot more sense than the American science, because when I was studying the quantum mechanics and quantum physics and things like that, all we would say in this country was that if you have a certain condition in a laboratory or an environment, a certain type of particle present, maybe something will happen, And it didn't mean anything to me. So with the Brahman science, they had names for families of energy, so I really began to work seriously with energy. Then I finished my PhD in homeopathic medicine and came back and started lecturing with the National Health Federation. And since that time, it's been about 6-7 years since I've been doing that. And I've been doing a lot of pyramid energies and developing the space travel devices that I was interested in developing back at NASA, but Uncle Sam wouldn't let us do that because it was a giant WPA project, and they figured it would be detrimental to the national economy to come on with these environmental projects too soon. They wanted to wait until we got into a situation like we're in now. The situation we're in now is that we've destroyed our water supply worldwide. We've raped our soil of minerals. Most people in the world are mineral deficient and not aware of it. And we're running out of air. So, you know, your feelings come from three different places. They come from, number one, your air. That's your first source of feelings. Second source of feelings comes from relationships, communication with each other, experiencing each other. And the third source of feelings comes from the food that we eat. Well, you can eat junk food for 10 or 15 years before it has a detrimental effect on the body. You end up with cancer or one of the diseases that you can have. It's a choice. You can have an argument with someone and have a bad relationship and still live on the physical plane for quite a while, maybe not feeling too well, or you can live in harmony. But if you just hold your breath for about 2 or 3 minutes and try to go out the door, you won't make it. So society has put a time, has put a fuse you fused yourselves, basically. And I'm not saying I'm not part of it, because I'm just as guilty as the next person. I'm just one that's trying to do something about it. And you fuse yourselves with your air supply, even though you look out here and it looks fairly clear. There's a tremendous amount of smog out here, even now.
There ain't a lot of air up there. And when you realize how one of those big 747s with four engines on it, developing 56,000 pounds of thrust or horsepower, that's 200,000 horsepower being used per second, you know, that's a lot of air. You know, and the trees on the planet down here, which are supposed to rejuvenate our atmosphere, can't do that. Because what are we doing? We're cutting our trees down, too, to build houses. Look at the price of wood. So you see the dilemma that we're going into? So we do have to have intervention now. It's necessary because we got to destroy, you know, this imagination. The government, the corrupt government, will have to be eliminated. And man can't eliminate it. God has to. If man tries it, he's called a rebellion. You know, we're called rebels or whatever. So we're going into what is called a revolution. And that's called the spiritual revolution. You know, my great-great-grandfather was a leader of a revolution, Ethan Allen, in this country. And they started a war in 1776. And we had a problem there. You know, people have a tendency not to get into action, even when all the facts are presented. Now, in 1620, when we came over here, we left England, right? To get away from taxation without representation is what we're having again right now, the same problem. So first of all, we ran away from England. When we ran away from England, we came here. The English just waited for us to get settled in our colonies, and then they began to infiltrate us, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. So finally, the colonies were a joke in England. They would probe us with their red coat regulars, and they would keep a fear trip going, like, you know, a paranoia always manifesting these times. And they kept us going, and so we didn't do anything about it. It started to get real bad. Well, then we decided we're going to have to get away and run them out. So we asked them to leave, and of course they didn't leave. So we had to organize ourselves. So the first thing we had to do was make our organization up and decide what we wanted to base our rebellion on. So we tried to draw up the Constitution of the United States. But when it was written, nobody would sign it. Okay? And John Adams, one of the people that wrote it, had a hell of a time even getting it written because there was such fights amongst the sons of the aristocrats, that were at that time our representatives, just like we have the same problems now. It's like having a bunch of representatives of oil companies. If you read some of the names back here on your chart, which is in the back room where the children are, you'll find that a lot of, like, Lynch was there, who have Merle C. Lynch today. And you'll see a lot of powerful families in running this greed trip today that signed that Constitution. And John Adams used to, you know, just absolutely tell him off, you know. And of course, Benjamin Franklin was always soothing him and saying, well, this is the best you got to work with, man. You got to work with these people. So that conflict was going on simultaneously. It was George Washington, who has more of the sons of the aristocrats over at Valley Forge. And he's waiting at Valley Forge. He's running out of food, money, and supplies for somebody to sign a Declaration of Independence so that he can start a war, you know, start shooting. But there's this huge stalemate. Nobody would do anything. Well, Ethan Allen came along. He was very rebellious, and he knew of both stalemates. And he was going on the inner levels. Well, we're always guided. I'll show some films later on today. Did that TV set arrive, by the way? It was supposed to come? We're going to do that later. Otherwise, we use mine, which is very small. And you'll see that there is an inner hierarchy, which we'll talk about late this afternoon, that guides this country. And so they got a person by the name of Saint Germain came and appeared on the balcony inside the Continental Congress room at a meeting and got him to sign that document. He gave a heck of a delivery of a speech, and this energy that he released motivated everybody to sign the document. Well, superphysically, Ethan Allen picked up on it, and he organized 50 people into a bridge in Lexington, Massachusetts, and he opened fire, just fire on a bunch of British regulars, just shot them down, you know. Then he went to Fort Ticonderoga, okay, and in the middle of the night, and the general was asleep, but he had 50 men, he says, wait outside, took a musket, took it up, went to the general's quarters and stuck it down his throat and said, pulled the hammer back and said, surrender, you know. The guy had no choice, so they go out in the courtroom and 800 soldiers come out half-dressed and put their guns in a pile, and they'd taken Fort Ticonderoga. Then Ethan Allen sent a message down to George Washington and said, told him of the massacre the day before and the capture of the fort that night, and he says, you better get rolling because as soon as the British find out about this, they're going to be shooting at you. So then away, then the war started. So that was the beginning of our war and our freedom. Well, the premise of the war, and it was George Washington, he was in the lodges, he was a Freemason and that. And our forefathers dedicated this land to the New Age people. They knew in the New Age that their sons and daughters would be the reincarnations of the Atlantean civilization, you know, the good side of the Atlantean civilization. They would get inherit the American soil. They knew this. The next thing happened was we had to symbolize this on the dollar, is what we chose. So three other Lodge brothers, Van Buren, who became a president, Tyler, and Gene Lafitte, the pirate, got together, and they were also into the secret inner teachings and guidance of the country, and they coined the Great Seal of the United States as a pyramid. This was in 1779. But the Continental Congress, which was a secondary, what I would say, level of consciousness, could not understand what the leaders were all about even at that time, so they wouldn't put that symbol on the dollar bill until 1939 on the Series A dollar bill. So you begin to see that there's a tremendous gap between the true leaders of this country and the followers that have to take care of the pragmatics. In other words, there's a big gap between the president and the congressman or the senator. But as time went on, our beautiful values, the country became very rich, and when it became very rich, it became lazy. And that's the story of civilization, you know. You feed a lion real well, he doesn't go out and hunt anymore. He just lays around and lets the women do it, you know. And so the woman in this case was the women in this country. They physically went to work, and they were treated like hell. So we had the rebellion of the women. The women were doing everything in the early, you know, in a lot of manufacturing things in the late 1800s, early 1900s, in England and here too. And so you begin to see all of the things that go on in corruption beginning happen, and it happened. So we got some dues to pay. That's all there is to it. We have some dues at this time. So now we have the New Age leaders, people like myself. And we know, we can see, because we have the foresight to see what has been, and we're not afraid to admit where we are now. And that's why I wear my dunce cap here, this pyramid, because I'll leave this thing on until, number one, I've cleaned the air back up. Number two, I've restored the food back, the soil back to its original condition. And number three, polluted got rid of the air, the water pollution. I'll do all three of those things. I may do it alone, or I'll do it with the help of anyone that wants to join me. And there are quite a few organizations now that are doing it, you know, because my children are not going to, I'm not going to leave this planet without leaving it cleaned up. For my kids, you know, and their generations. I have enough courage and enough respect for God at this point in the universe to, I don't care what has been done, I'm not going to say that my state is because of that. I'm going to change the state that I'm in by changing my state. So we begin to start somewhere. So I'll start with a slideshow now and show you about our own temples a little bit.
Well, we start with the root of the body, which is the colon. In the yogis, when we do yoga, it's the sacral chakra. But the primary organ in the body where all disease and degeneration begins is the large intestine. Well, how many of you in here have been to colon lectures? Anybody in here? All of you? Well, you have. Okay. And most of the main topic of the National Health Federation, and each of us has a part, like Dr. Yamayamas and Dr. Ellis and that are covering a lot with fluoridation and the effects of the water. In other parts of the country, we're talking a lot about colon therapy, and what I do most of my lectures with the National Health Federation is on the topic of plays in environments and atmosphere and oxygen on the body. So now, the large intestine digests all of the minerals coming into the body. And my specialty in medicine is homeopathic medicine. I'm a homeopathic physician. So this is one of my degree areas where I've studied and specialized for the last several years. And we find that most people have colons that look like this rather than like this. 90% of people coming into our clinics look like that. And what's happening is why they look like this, they're shriveling up like this. This is the dehydrating effect right here. This is the descending colon where it goes for release out. This is dehydrated due to what, this is what preservatives and food substances will do for you. It dehydrates the colon. Proper irregularity causes a stretching action in the colon. And most people that have had a heart attack and lived from it did not have a heart attack at all, but the colon was stretched up, like on this one, up against the heart, and causes a cardiac restriction. So a heart attack has one symptom, death. Pseudo heart attack has cramping and everything like a heart attack, but there's not really a heart attack. A lot of people have had this symptom here. And of course, when they give nitroglycerin, this will help it because it forces the heart muscles into contraction and restriction back and forth, so it forces it away. But the ideal thing is colon therapy. A lot of people that are hyperactive, people come to me and say they're hyperactive, they've got too much energy, and they're jumping around like a nervous cat. It's not caused by an overactive adrenal and lots of adrenaline in the blood. It's caused by poisons in the blood. Okay? When I studied with the Tibetans put me through an exercise as a final initiation before I left their lamasaric care. And that's where large amounts of strychnine were placed in my body. Enough strychnine was placed in my body to kill 50 people. And that was to give the experience of what they call a death experience. And when this large amount of strychnine was placed in my body, I was taught certain meditation exercises, certain physical exercises, and certain yoga exercises, which I had to combine to move the poison out of my body so that I would not lose my form. The experience was very, very euphoric, but it was very rigid on the body. It was very nauseous. The American Indians did the same experience with the peyote button. They used to take the peyote button, because any of these experiences stop the flow of serotonin on the pineal gland, which we'll cover in a little while, causing a spiritual experience or a revelation of our higher nature. It's something brought before us. And I found that with the strychnine in my body, I had an excessive amount of energy. It did not stimulate the adrenaline. It gave me an excessive amount of energy. And this was a three-day ritual out on a desert. So what I had to do with the strychnine is I had to do running. I had to physically run for a certain length of time. Then I had to sit in what is called a kundalini position and do a large amount of breathing exercise where you go. What this did was put large amounts of oxygen into the bloodstream so that the oxygenated blood in the liver can take the poison from my body. And this exchanging process of large amounts of oxygen and this excessive running and the meditation that went with it caused a complete discharge of the poison. And this would happen, it would come in rushes. There would be 3 or 4 hours of meditation in peace, then the system would pick up a large amount of strychnine and go into like a spasm. We'd have to work through that and go into a peaceful thing. And each time as the poison decreased in the body, it pulled out other toxins with it, and the experience was a very high euphoric experience on the second day. The American Indians did the same thing, the same exercise as the Tibetans, only did it with a rattlesnake bite. The rattlesnake bite, with the brave was put in a circle of rocks in a sacred burial ground, or a sacred ground, and they had the blessings of the tribe. So this kept the air purified during this out-of-body experience so that some low influence didn't take the body, and the brave would let the snake bite him several times on the first day, and then he would be on a fast for 3 or 4 days, maybe 7 days. And there was no administration to the poison in the body. It was not removed, it was consumed and converted. So that means that a human being with colon problems, with worms, can absorb the poison, can utilize the poison, but it's not the best way to go, and it's not a desirous experience. So the idea is to remove these things. The second thing that we find in colon therapy is the small intestine feeds the large intestine, and there's a valve called the ileocecal valve. Most people have a jammed or blocked ileocecal valve. I was a vegetarian for 7 years before I had my first colonic, and I had a blocked valve. So when we put the barium in through here, the barium not only showed the deficiencies in the large intestine, but it went up in the small intestine as well. So the oxygen water treatment, what they give to get rid of this condition, will also open this valve and it'll cause it to work properly. Okay? And digestion is an important thing to understand. And basically, the way the digestive process works in the human being is this. The enzyme is a chemical product or a chemical property that we all have. We have different enzymes to break down different foods. And the enzyme goes in a chemical reaction, but is not consumed by that chemical reaction. So if we eat some food, and that's going to be broken down to form protein, certain enzymes are always required. Now the body can only process so many enzymes at a time. That's why they'll tell you to mix carbohydrate and fruit, or fruit and protein, or carbohydrate and protein, but not to mix fruit and vegetables, things like that, certain combinations, because the body cannot manufacture all these enzymes and produce them and digest them and process them in the stomach. So you end up with some kind of an alimentary canal problem because you combine the wrong foods. That's why we have these little food charts out now. And a good thing that I learned from Pablo Arroyo, which I've always done, is that when you eat salads, eat your salad last in a meal. Don't eat it first, because the salad distributes the hydrochloric acid all over the stomach. So the hydrochloric acid is needed along with the digestive enzyme pepsin to break down large fat molecules. So those of you that are eating meat and other heavier foods, if you eat the salad first, there's no hydrochloric acid left. So what happens is the meat is pushed on down through the alimentary canal and ends up impacting the colon and constipation as a result. So eat the salad last. Okay, that's why in Europe they always serve the salad last. So now when you eat food, you start chewing the food, the first thing you do is you start releasing enzymes. Okay? The enzymes are released in the saliva. They're stored in the salivary ducts. It's inside the mouth. The food with the enzyme is brought down into the stomach. There, it combines and begins to form the amino acids. The amino acids are called peptides and polypeptides. The best reason not to eat meat with the formation of these amino acids, because if you look at the peptides in an animal and the peptides in a human being, the peptides are in an animal are different than a human being, and the human body cannot absorb the aminos properly. An example of that, I'll just draw a typical thing right here. Here, these would be like papain, pepsin, and that. These would be peptides forming polypeptides, and they're carbon atom chains in the body. Now the first one would represent a chain, and when these things are lined up like this, you have a complete amino acid. If in the case of an animal, you need an animal product, the first three might line up, the second three might line up, and they're absorbed, and they become denser. So this is an amino acid that's already in the body. This is the one to be digested. And as they digest, they combine chemically, making the nucleus of each amino more dense or solid. But in the case of an animal, maybe the first six would combine, but the last three would not. So you get a cancellation reaction. So two-thirds of the animal product did something, and one-third didn't. The one-third that didn't, what it does is causes an allergic condition in the body. And immediately, when anybody eats meat, if you measure your blood pressure and your heartbeat, the blood pressure always goes up 20 to 30% in any person ever eating meat. Now, when the blood pressure and the heartbeat goes up 20 to 30% on the eating of meat, immediately causes the heart to go up in its rate, and it causes more heartbeats. The heart has X number of billions of beats in a lifetime, and if you're constantly eating meat, you're shortening the lifespan of the heart. The next condition that happens is in the arteries in the skin, the epithelial cells. And what happens there is if you look at the skin, here's the surface of the skin, I'll draw it here, right here, coming up like this. And epithelial cells in the arteries, the way the blood supply, it comes up, it makes a sharp bend at the surface of the skin, and comes back down again. Well, what happens is when you're eating meat, the allergenic response causes an erosion at the top part of this blood vessel where it comes out to the surface of the skin. Just like if you had like the Mississippi River, when certain rains come, it starts eroding out certain banks on the outside. This happens every time you eat meat. When this happens, the body has to repair that damage, and that's what cholesterol is for. So the body immediately, when this toxic condition comes on, starts secreting cholesterol. So that therefore, every time you eat meat, it causes a erosion of the arteries, an increase in heartbeat, an increase in blood pressure, and a secretion of cholesterol. That's why a lot of people on high cholesterol and low cholesterol diets can't get the same results, because some of them on a high cholesterol are meat eaters and some of them aren't. Okay? That's the reason why, because of that toxic reaction. Whereas a vegetable protein, like a tomato, for example, won't cause this reaction in the body. Now, I'm not saying those of you that are eating meat don't do like I did. When I learned all these medical facts about meat eating, I immediately stopped eating meat, instantly. Just right there, triple Leo, right? No more meat eating. And what I did 2 years later is I went into protein deprivation. And when protein deprivation went manifested on me, I came one day, I was looking, I had a normal arm, and all of a sudden this area in my arm turned bright red and swelled up a half an inch. And every portion of my body, this area of my chest, swelled up, became bright red, swelled up a half an inch. Areas on my legs, here, here, and here. My face, my cheeks swelled up, and my neck. So I was like a patchwork quilt. That condition lasted for 4 hours, and then it completely went neutral again, and the area that was swollen red went neutral, and the area that wasn't swollen swelled up. And I did that for 2 weeks. And then finally I found out that I had protein deprivation, and one of my teachers at the School of Axolism in San Diego, I went down there to him and asked him, what's happening to me? I'm flashing hot, flashing cold. I couldn't feel any mental changes, but I knew something was wrong with my body. It was protein deprivation. He sat me down and says, you're going to have a steak. And I says, wait a minute. I can't digest meat. I haven't had a piece of meat in 2 years. He says, bet me. And he started frying the steak on the stove, and that smelled good. And I sat down and I ate that whole steak, and I felt so good afterward. And my body immediately was recovered from that. We weren't in that shock anymore. So if you go off meat, don't go off it, you know, immediately. Go off it over a period of 7 years. It takes 7 years for the body to regenerate a complete set of organs. And all of the endocrine glands have different hormones in them and different enzymes in them that have trained us to digest and assimilate the food as we know it in our habitual patterns. So when you make a transition, make one transition 7 years. If you're going off meat, you eat it 7 days a week, cut it down for the first year to say 5 days a week. And alternate your fish and your meat in your chicken, like that. You have a question?
Is there a difference between vegetarian protein and animal protein?
Yeah, there is. There is. It's in the chemical structure. It's in the, and it breaks down in polypeptides, like I was telling you about. There is a difference, right? Animal protein is very close to human protein. Now, eggs, things like that, are closer. Eggs are good for you. The rule that I always learned from my teachers, and I found it works, if it falls off a tree, what's it going to do? It's going to rot. You know, it's common sense. A chicken lays an egg. If somebody doesn't eat the egg, it rolls off on the floor and breaks. So I'm not saying in vegetarianism, abstain from protein totally. No, I eat eggs, I eat butter. These are natural byproducts of the animal. I just don't eat the animal itself. Chicken is not good for you, not because the chicken is not so good, it's because what the chickens are fed and raised. When I lived in Arkansas, we raised chickens. We raised a chicken in 19 weeks. We fed it full of chemicals and it just swelled out. This is a protein swelling. And most of the chickens that we raised had cancer or pneumonia when we would pick them up. They'd have growths on them, tumors, or they'd be breeding so bad, tremendous amounts of pneumonia. Because the chickens were growing so fast, and there was very little attention taken to their actual health. All they wanted to do is make them grow fast. And they were just a big mucus bag. So they weren't that good. So you're better off on fish. Fish is your best bet. And red meat better than chicken. Although in the old days you've been better off eating chicken versus red meat. The idea is to rotate the meat when you're eating it. Now, the next thing is when you digest, you chew the food up, it's mixed with the enzyme, it goes down into the upper part of the stomach and the small intestine. Here, it's broken down from protein to carbohydrates. Now, the carbohydrate is like an explosive or volatile mixture in the small intestine when it gets down here, just above the ileocecal valve. The last part of digestion, when it's turned into carbohydrate in the lower part of the small intestine, this is what's called the last part of the Krebs cycle. And during the last part of the Krebs cycle, the liver secretes bile and the pancreas secretes insulin. So in the presence of carbohydrate, insulin, and bile comes oxygen through the airstream, through the lungs. And as soon as oxygen hits this mixture, it ignites in the body, producing body heat, and electricity, magnetism, and all the things that give us that warm feeling that takes place in this area down here. So that's your last stage of digestion. Then, the fiber material that is not exploded is then moved out through the ileocecal valve after the heat process and out in the large intestine where the minerals are now extracted. The vitamins are taken out here and the minerals come out through here. And this chart, if you can read it clearly, shows you which each one of these folds breaks down a particular mineral. The science is down to that degree right now. And this iridology is very good at this point, because when you look at iridology, each one of these folds has an optic fiber going out to the eye. So an iridologist can see by each part in the eye, and as you look at the eyes all the way around the outside of the iris, you can see the actual shape of the colon. The same thing is these fibers also go to the fingertips, so when we use Perlian photography, we can see the electrical shape. He's looking at an optical shape, I'm looking at an electrical shape. So this is why the Perlian photography is so beneficial in diagnosing the colon. And we're able, through Perlian photography and then using the barium x-ray, we can actually determine that. Because we put a small amount of barium in water inside the body, and an x-ray, it shows up as an actual glow like that. So now we can diagnose the comparison between the x-ray, the iridology, and the Perlian photography. That's how we got the Perlian photography evolved to where it is today, by these comparisons. Because in the holistic movement, everybody's working with brothers, and we're communicating and sharing our knowledge all the time. So it gives us total knowledge of each other's respective fields. So it makes us, gives us a wider degree of presentation.
Well, that was fun, and we'll catch you next week. Welcome, you coast-to-coast listeners, too. I know there's a bunch of you, and we'll talk to you next week. That ends the deal.